And a few of our emerging artists have their websites posted up at the coasttocoastam.com. A few of the others don't have websites, but go ahead and take a look at some of their incredible work. We're going to come back in a moment, chat more with Joshua P. Warren about Halloween, and then we'll take your phone calls this hour with him on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. I'm going to give you a little Halloween trivia here. Halloween is an annual holiday celebrated each year on October 31st. It originated with the ancient Celtic festival of Samhain, when people would light bonfires and wear costumes to ward off ghosts. And the evening before was known as All Hallows' Eve, and then later Halloween. Isn't that interesting, Josh?
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, that it goes back thousands of years. And I think Samhain was the original pronunciation. And they would talk about this being a period of time when, of course, they were, you know, reaping the rewards of harvest, but preparing for the cold, dead months of winter. And so they believed that as the world was sort of transitioning into the cold, dead time, that there was a period where the veil was so thin. In fact, Europeans often talk about what they call thin places. The boundary was so thin between where we are and where the spirits are that we could encounter each other for at least one or two nights and interact with each other. And the good part was, well, some of your loved ones might come through, but then there were also all of these creepy evil beings that could come through. And so you'd wear a mask so that you'd blend in with the evil ones, and they'd be like, oh, you're one of us, you know, and they wouldn't harm you. But from a more, I think, updated point of view, George, this also happens to be the time of year when here in our part of the world, the earth is shifting away from the sun. And so that means not only does it get, you know, colder and darker as we tilt into that mysterious black void of space, but furthermore, we are not being as strongly bombarded by the radiation coming from the sun. And therefore, subtle things that might otherwise have been sort of drowned out in the noise of the sun's radiation could pop a little more. So for example, let's say I shine a flashlight towards you outside on a bright sunny day. Well, you're not going to notice that as much as you would if I did it on a dark night.
Right.
And so what happens in general with
but it's
Earth
still there. But it's still there.
It's still there, but it's just not as prominent and noticeable. So This is the time of year when we shift away from the sun, and a lot of these subtle energies, electromagnetic, electrostatic, and otherwise, that are associated with these spirits and other paranormal entities are suddenly more distinctive and play more of a significant role in our awareness. And, of course, we're also enhancing this because we're paying more attention and we're looking out for it more.
Let's take some calls here with you, Josh, as we continue chatting. I want to ask you about Robert the Haunted Doll in a moment. Let's go to Charles, first-time caller in Asheville, North Carolina. Hey, Charles, go ahead. You with us? Nope, he's not. Let's give John in Virginia Beach, Virginia, a try. Hey, John, go ahead.
Hi, George. Josh.
Hey.
Look, I want to tell you a story that happened to me back in the middle 90s. Now, I never believed in ghosts, spirits, UFOs, ETs, anything of that sort. However, back in 90s, I had an uncle who had passed away, and they were having a memorial service for him at a church. And I wasn't that close to him, but I decided to go. Anyway, I went. I was late getting there, so I had to sit in the back because the church was packed. And the service was going on, and all of a sudden, I felt somebody standing behind me, behind one of the pillars in the church. And I looked up, and it was my uncle that had just passed away.
Whoa.
And he told me, he said, John, don't drive your car. And I was shocked. I didn't know what to do. And then he said, John, don't drive your car. Well, I was so scared, I had to get out of there. So I got up, get ready to leave, and I looked, and he was gone. He wasn't there. But still, I was, you know, I knew I saw him. And so I got a ride home with a friend of mine, And the next morning, I called my cousin, which was the son of the man that passed away, and asked him if he would mind bringing my car to me and I'd get him a ride back home. He said, not at all. So he and his girlfriend got in my car, and I told him where the keys were under the floor mat. Anyway, they were driving my car home, and they pulled out the church parking lot, and they were hit by a truck.
Oh.
And they weren't killed, but they were extremely,
injured.
Hurt. I mean, they had broken bones and all, and they went to the hospital. But I never told anybody this. I was reluctant to say anything about it, but I did tell two of my close friends, and I don't know whether they believe me or not, but I was sure this happened.
Oh,
and
my God.
I just, up until now, I haven't told anything.
And the warning was just not to be in that car, as opposed to you driving the car.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to drive it after he told me that.
Yeah.
So
but you didn't
did.
Think it would carry on to them.
No. I didn't have any idea they would be injured in my car. But they were. Fortunately, they weren't killed. But that's the only time I ever encountered anything, like I say, spirits, ghosts, UFOs, anything else, because I've never seen him.
Josh, why do spirits come across like that and warn you?
Yeah, well, John, thank you for that. That's a great call. And it, I believe, represents one of the most interesting aspects of the spiritual realm. Scientists who are the smartest folks among us right now, who are, the astrophysicists, the cosmologists, the quantum physicists, they're telling us that we have the mathematical models, we have the experimental data to prove that all time is happening at once, at least on this particular timeline, that the past, the present, and the future are all happening at once. The problem is that we humans are spirits in the material world. It's like that song by The Police. And so when you are a spirit trapped here in this material body, you're only able to process what's happening on the timeline little by little, minute by minute, hour by hour, day by day, week by week, and so on. But once you are no longer in this body, it seems like you're able to have an awareness of things that extend far beyond what we physical or physically incarnated humans call the present. And so it would make perfect sense that if you have a loved one, especially one who has recently passed into the spiritual realm, that person may be astounded by the fact that he or she can now see the future to a degree that you cannot. It might almost be like comparing the perspective of an ant to the perspective of an eagle. They're both physical beings, but they just have a different point of view. And when the eagle's way up high, he can see the storms that are coming that the ant can't see. But the ant is more sensitive to what's happening on a lower level. So anyway, all that said, your relatives, your friends, your loved ones who pass over might definitely be able to see beyond the scope of the temporary situation and see somewhat into the future, and that would certainly be great motivation for them to come and give you a warning. And in this case, John, it seems like that's the most likely thing that happened to you.
Any updates with Robert the Haunted Doll, Josh?
Robert at this point lives like a king. And this is very funny because...
He's still down in Florida?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen him in a while now, but Robert, I think, really became famous, or some would say infamous, as Robert, because that a lot of people were sort of chiding him, and I don't want to use the word abusing him, but basically they were taking him out and cathartically releasing their pent-up frustrations on him. And it was when this shockwave of curses and bad luck started hitting all those people that suddenly word began to spread like, okay, this doll here ain't,
Robert was fighting back.
Yeah. And it's because of that he, I believe, now is so famous, because the word has now spread for so long that if you go to see him, you have to be respectful. People now take it seriously. And I don't think that there are nearly as many people who are going to see him now, who are having bad experiences or even paranormal experiences because he seems to be at peace. And I think it's in part thanks to people like you, George. You know, you inspired me and gave me the opportunity to go down there to Key West and almost 10 years ago and to do live reports and to really dig into this. And you may or may not recall, George, I actually called into the show.
I remember.
Live.
Yep.
Live. It was just me and Robert and the whole place, just the two of us.
Was it creepy?
Yes, it is creepy because Robert the Doll, I mean, just anybody who's never seen Robert the Doll, just go look him up, you know, on type in Robert the Doll on Google and you can see he's a creepy looking guy. But from the moment I got there, I was respectful. I asked his permission. If you go to my website, you can click around and find some of my video that I shot, you know, from the moment that I actually met Robert the Haunted Doll. And I said, look, I'm Joshua P. Warren. I have come here to understand you. I'm going to report on what I find to a lot of people. I'm asking for your permission, blah, blah, blah. And so I think Robert and I got along very well. And so I think you should also rest assured, George, that you played a big role probably in helping to educate people that there is something bad that happens to you if you're disrespectful to this doll. And if you're nice to the doll, then you have nothing to worry about. So I think he is much happier, so to speak, than ever.
Now, originally, too, when the doll was first given to the family years ago, didn't people see the doll, like, in the window or running back and forth and weird stuff like that?
Well, you know, the weirdest and creepiest thing about the story of Robert the Haunted Doll is that he was given to a young boy, Robert Eugene Otto, which everybody called Eugene or Gene.
Mm-hmm.
And Gene became obsessed with this doll when Gene was only like maybe 4 or 5 years old. And then Gene grew up to be a very, you know, successful man, had a wife that everybody loved, had a nice big house, but it didn't change his infatuation with the doll. I mean, you might think back when you were a kid, maybe there was some toy that was special to you, and there came a point when it just sort of drifted away. That never happened for Gene Otto. He kept this doll till the end of his life and treated it, in many cases, they say, if you talk to locals, better than he treated his wife. I mean, had a little special furniture made for him and gave him a little special room. So his room was eventually moved to the attic at the wife's insistence. But, you know, they claim that when finally Eugene died, and his wife moved out of the house, and the house sat there abandoned for quite a few years waiting for a buyer to come along. And I actually did get to talk to some of the caretakers who worked in that house during that period of time, who told me about just chilling experiences. But nonetheless, people who were in the community said at night you could sometimes walk outside the windows, and you'd look up, and you knew that house was empty.
There he was.
You knew that, but you'd see little Robert the Doll running around that house, George, back and forth in front of the windows.
I love that. Next up, let's go to Tyler in Asheville, North Carolina. First-time caller for Tyler. Hey, Tyler, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Good to have you with us.
So, Joshua, I was up on the Blue Ridge Parkway about 14 years ago. It was around August, and I experienced some crazy lights. To make it brief, I was up at around like Black Balsam area. Me and my friends were just hanging out up there, and then all of a sudden, like, this huge, deep, dark fog just kind of swept in the afternoon. Like, we were watching the sunset. All of a sudden, this super thick fog just sat in. There were like 6 to 8 what looked to be like Jeep headlights off in the distance. Thought nothing of it. About 5 to 10 minutes later, they started heading right out at, like, right at us. We got to thinking about it. We were at an overlook. There was no way it could have been like Jeeps or anything. We started watching them in like disbelief at this point. They get right up on us about 200 feet away. And then they just, like, broke apart and just started, like, buzzing all around, and we took off. Come to find, like, for 2 years, I thought I was crazy. Me and my two friends were like, what the heck was that?
What's going on out that way, Josh?
Yeah, it was some wild stuff. And then about a year or two later, my buddy sent me a link. It might have been from your website or something talking about it. And it just, like, connected the dots. I've been really trying to contact you, but we're not trying, but, you know, wanting to talk to you for about 12 years now to just see what you think about it.
What is that, Josh?
Well, Tyler, thank you for that call. Always good to talk to a fellow Asheville, another Tar Heel. And, you know,
right in
North Carolina, you know, everybody, of course, focuses on Brown Mountain. The Brown Mountain Lights, because the Brown Mountain Lights are the most famous example.
And you've talked about them before, Josh.
Yeah, of this strange phenomenon where you have these balls of light that appear. But actually, this is widespread. This goes beyond Brown Mountain. This goes all over, as Tyler was saying, the Blue Ridge Mountains. And, you know, which is, of course, a part of the Appalachian chain, you know, leading over to the Great Smoky Mountains. There are all kinds of spots where these balls of light appear. Now, I believe that if you really want to get the scoop on this, you can download a free PDF about it if you go to brownmountainlights.com. But basically, and I own that website, but what I can tell you is that there are places on Earth that produce an incredible amount of natural energy, and that energy has as a byproduct a bunch of paranormal activity that spins off. So you get more ghostly encounters, people seeing UFOs, time slips, cryptids, all that kind of stuff. But in its rawest form, it's almost like meridians on planet Earth that acupuncturists might compare to the meridians of energy that flow on a human body. These are places that conduct electricity, and when that electricity manifests and interacts in certain angles at certain cliffs, it can create what's similar to ball lightning. And so you have so much of that, which is creepy, around Western North Carolina, but at the same time, it almost seems to sometimes have a consciousness. And so we're still uncertain as to whether or not these balls of light are just merely and simply a raw natural phenomenon like ball lightning, or if they might also have some sense of intelligence. And this is what makes this such a great mystery.
Joshua's website, joshuapwarren.com. He's got the information coming up with a Saturday Los Angeles event at his website. If you get there, the first 5 to 10 people will get free tickets there if you use the code Tesla by just typing that in there. And that's all they need to do. When will they get notified, Josh?
Well, what you need to do is go to my website, joshuapwarren.com, and sign up for my free e-newsletter. I'm going to send a newsletter out sometime this week and say the first 5 to 10 people who reply to this newsletter with the word Tesla will get the free ticket.
Let's come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and take some final phone calls with Josh. And then next hour, we're talking haunted World War II, soldier spirits, ghost planes, and strange synchronicities with Matthew Swain. So get ready for that. And don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, email me at george@coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you with Joshua P. Warren, our final segment. Next hour, we'll talk about haunted World War II, amazing stories. Matthew Swain will join us. So, Josh, my friend, you are one of a kind. How did you originally get started in paranormal investigating? What was that one catalyst that got you into it?
Oddly enough, George, it was really an incident that happened before I was born.
Really?
Yeah. Because I come from a large family. My mother is the youngest of 10 kids, and my dad is one of 7 kids.
Wow.
And on both sides of my family, they've been in the mountains of Western North Carolina since the late 1700s, early 1800s. But there was this one incident that occurred on my mother's side of the family in the Great Depression. My mother's mother was named Virginia Calloway. That was her maiden name. And when she was about 13 years old, she got a camera as a birthday present, which was a pretty big deal back then. Her family was a little better off than most, but that didn't last long. They lost everything in the Depression. But she lived out in the countryside, and one day her father, a guy named Jack, and her older brother, who was in his 20s, named Claude, came home from a small game hunting trip, and she photographed them holding up their squirrels and rabbits and stuff. And when the picture developed, my great uncle, Claude Calloway, her older brother, did not have a head. And they knew that was weird, but they were not able to understand enough about photography to realize just how weird it was. So fast forward 1 month later, Claude was sitting on the porch of the house, and he was reading a copy of his favorite publication, Western Magazine, old gunslinger tales. And his father, Jack, was in the kitchen fixing lunch. And they were conversing through an open window. And at some point, Jack said something to Claude, and Claude didn't answer. And when the lunch was ready, Jack went outside. And here's Claude's magazine lying on the porch, but there's no Claude. And long story short, my great uncle, Claude Calloway, was never seen or heard from again.
Jeez. Got to get David Politis involved in this, huh?
Well, yeah. Well, you know, it's not too far from where there is a national park these days, you know, the wow. Pisgah National Park area.
Hmm.
And what's even weirder is that, you know, they did everything. They got the authorities involved. They got, you know, they were searching the woods. And you know, here this fella, my great uncle, was waiting for his lunch, you know, in the middle of a story, reading a magazine. And how could he have disappeared? Was he abducted? Was he raptured away? Did he get caught up in a space-time slip? I mean, we don't know. But you see, it was compounded by the fact that this creepy photograph was taken 1 month before. And when I became an adult, I went back to that area and did everything I could to try to find out what had happened. And, I mean, I verified the whole story with elderly people and historians. But still, there's no explanation for this. And you see, this was a big tragedy in my family. They never got over it. They never had closure. And I got to grow up sort of seeing the sensitive wounds that this created. And it made me realize that some of these mysterious phenomena, they're not just legends or superstition or old folk tales. I mean, the paranormal, if you want to call it that, is something very real that we have to take seriously. And so that inspired me to go out and sort of try to define fact versus fiction. And then finally, by the time I got into my early 20s, was when I really started seeing some bizarre stuff for myself with my own two eyes.
Good for you. Let's go to the final calls here. Let's go to Mary in Los Angeles to get things started. Hi, Mary. Go ahead.
My birthday is November 2nd, which is the Day of the Dead. And I was wondering, I know it means All Souls Day.
Yes.
And how does that relate to Halloween?
All Souls Day and Halloween.
Yeah, well, thank you for your call, Mary. As a matter of fact, my birthday is October 25th. My mother's birthday is November the 3rd, the day after yours. And my sister's birthday is November the 5th. And I can't tell you how many people I know who have birthdays around Halloween, including Dr. Mulder, who builds the wishing machines. His birthday is on Halloween. And I'll just say, if you go back 9 months, it takes you kind of close to Valentine's Day. So maybe there's an explanation there for why I know so many people who have birthdays around, you know, October. But as far as your particular question is concerned, so the basic tradition of Samhain, which, of course, we now call Halloween, is built around October 31st. And this is the product of the Catholic Church coming into the pagan areas of Europe and trying to dominate them and switch them away from their pagan beliefs into Christianity.
With their own date.
Well,
November 2nd.
Well, they realized that, you know, they weren't doing a good job at switching them over to Christianity. So instead, the Catholic Church tried to sort of work with the pagans, and say, instead of considering October 31st some kind of pagan holiday, you know, why don't we kind of sanctify this whole time period and say that, well, this is the evening before the spirits of the saints come back, which would be November the 1st. And so we will say November the 1st is the Hallowed day, and the evening before that is the Hallowed evening or Halloween. And so then they sort of combined the pagan beliefs of Halloween with All Saints Day on November 1st. And then, of course, November 2nd, they said, well, why don't we just not only celebrate the saints, but just celebrate all the souls of people who have died. And so you end up with All Souls Day. But this is one of those interesting examples. It goes back to, you know, Christmas. We're going to be hearing more stories about this soon, probably as Christmas approaches, where, you know, a lot of the pagans would go out and worship trees, you know, the evergreen quality of trees.
Huh.
And there was one of the higher-ups in the Catholic Church who said, look, if we go out and we find a bunch of people who are worshiping a tree, and we tell them you're all wrong, and we cut the tree down, and we punish them, we're not going to win any friends. Instead, let's go and sanctify the tree, and then what they are already worshiping will just sort of morph into our philosophy. And so you see a similar syncretic sort of attitude toward Halloween, and that's why Samhain, which is called Halloween by being the evening before the Hallowed Day of All Saints Day and then All Souls Day, is all mixed into this battle of religion and philosophies between the ancient European pagans and the movement of the ancient Christians.
We've got Kyle in Clinton, Utah now. It's his turn. Hi, Kyle.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay. Go ahead.
All right. So I just got off work at 11:30-ish, and I was in the psych ward on the fifth floor of McKady Hospital in Ogden. And I'm cleaning and I'm mopping. It's called the day room, you know, where the psych people come, they do their activities. And all of a sudden, I see this little 9-year-old boy, I would say, maybe 10, out of the corner of my eye. I couldn't see him directly straight, you know, just that corner of my eye. I could see him perfectly. And he's looking at me. And so I start mopping. I continue mopping because I'm like, okay, this is kind of eerie. And he pushes me pretty hard. And so I was wondering, it seems like since I've been working there for about a month, like, do you think it's maybe around October? Is that when the spirits really start to show themselves? Or?
And he wasn't supposed to be there, was he?
I don't think so. But I talked to the CNA and a couple of the nurses, and they told me that everyone who goes in there by themselves, or maybe two or three people, they feel like someone's watching them. And I was just wondering, like, Josh, or what do you guys think? Because, like, it seems like to me it's October, because it's not a full moon, because the full moon, I can tell you what, it gets really crazy around the hospital for whatever reason.
Kyle, do you know if a little boy died there?
You know, I asked them, and they said, from what we understand, no one's died there, but they said we don't know the full history
of the place.
McKady Hospital.
What do you think, Josh?
Well, Kyle, thank you for that call. And yes, I think that this time of year has more prominent paranormal activity for at least three reasons. Reason number one goes back to what I was saying earlier in the show about the Earth tilting away from the sun and subtle energy fields being magnified, or at least being more perceptible. So that's number one. Number two is that here, again, in our part of the world, in the Northern Hemisphere, most places have a colder, drier environment. And I know that's certainly the case in Utah. So that means there is a larger buildup of electrostatic charges. So when you lay down at night and you pull your sheets up, you might see those little blue sparks flying around, similar to when you drag your socks on the carpet and touch the doorknob. And there is a definite relationship between enhanced electrostatic charge and the ability for paranormal phenomena to materialize and interact. In my laboratory over the years, I've been able to reproduce many of the things that people talk about when they encounter the paranormal using electrostatic charges, such as creating luminous light forms, making objects move without any visible source, creating the sensation of a cold spot or a cold wind, what they call an ion wind, making your hair stand on end. These are all things that you can do artificially with electrostatic charge. And yet, when you go to these places where people are often experiencing extreme paranormal phenomena, you find that there are these very strong electrostatic anomalies in the area. So there's some connection there regarding how that the non-physical realm of the spiritual might be able to temporarily interact with the physical realm. And it reminds me of how something like a magnet has this invisible field around it that creates a physical effect. But then the third and final point, of course, is that this time of year, we're talking about it more. I mean, you go to the store, you see all of these things that remind you of the paranormal, the spooky, the afterlife. You see it all on TV. You see the movies coming out. And so you combine those three things together, and certainly it means that, again, at least here in the United States, this is the time of year when we have the highest likelihood of experiencing something ghostly, spooky, creepy, paranormal, or at very least, metaphysical.
And Josh, don't you get energized during this time of the year for some reason?
Well, I do, and I think, you know, part of it goes back to the fact that, you know, I was born this month, and so, you know, that's always been a time of celebration. My mom and dad have always been fantastic people who've always, you know, been really cool, arranging nice things for me. And growing up in Western North Carolina, especially in Asheville, when the leaves are splashed with color and everybody's becoming very festive, it's a great reflection of that original celebratory mood from the old world. In fact, so many people of Scots-Irish descent came into the mountains of Western North Carolina because they found them familiar, that every single genealogist I've ever talked to says there are more people of, for example, Scottish descent in North Carolina than there are in Scotland. And we should remember that the very first attempt at an English settlement was in North Carolina on the coast at a place called Roanoke Island, and they all vanished. So we now know that today is one of history's greatest mysteries, the lost colony. And so I was born in an area that had an enormous amount of influence from the early, you know, Scots-Irish, who originated these ideas about celebrating Samhain and Halloween. And so that, combined with my birthday, makes me very excited, and I'm sure contributed to the fact that I love this time of year.
30 seconds. Give us your event again one more time.
All right. Go to joshuapwarren.com. There's no period after the P. joshuapwarren.com. This Saturday, October 13th, in Hollywood, 2 to 4 p.m., it is my final Wishing Machine extravaganza. Everybody gets a free gift. I'm not going to disappoint you. This is going to be a great time for all of us. And if you want to get a chance at a free ticket, go to joshuapwarren.com. Sign up for my free e-newsletter. The secret word is Tesla.
You got
I'll be
it.
Sending out that soon.
Thanks, Josh. Be in touch, my friend. I always think the world of you.